Hello, readers. My name is Jason Jefferies, and I am your host for Bookin', presented by Quail Ridge Books, Raleigh, North Carolina's trusted community bookstore. My guest today is Itaf Rum, whose debut novel, A Woman Is No Man, was just released by HarperCollins Publishers. Itaf, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Thank you for being here. Itaf, before we talk about your excellent debut novel, A Woman Is No Man, I'm hoping we can tell our listeners a little bit about who you are. You were born in Brooklyn, New York, correct?
Yes.
And tell us a little bit more about yourself, please.
I was born in Brooklyn to Palestinian immigrants and raised there by them in a very conservative family with strict cultural mores. And when I was 19, I had an arranged marriage and moved here to North Carolina, and I've been living here since. I went to undergrad and graduate school at NC State, and yeah, I've been here, and I love it.
Excellent. So as you just mentioned, you live in North Carolina, not too far from where we sit here at Quail Ridge Books, but I met you in Albuquerque, New Mexico, at the American Booksellers Association's Winter Institute. I was telling you earlier, I met several people from North Carolina there, and it's funny how you sometimes have to travel 1,000 miles or more to meet someone that lives right in your backyard. As a debut novelist, what was the experience at the Winter Institute like for you?
I was really excited to be around booksellers and people that I admire and love books the way that I do. So it was very surreal to me as someone that was writing a book to not just write this book and put it out into the world, but to be surrounded with people that appreciate and love books the way that I do.
Who did you meet there that you were excited about meeting?
I had just finished reading a book, a memoir called I Miss You When I Blink by Mary Laura Philpott, and I knew she was there, so I went around looking for her and I got to meet her, and that was really exciting. I also was super excited that Margaret Atwood was going to be there. I wasn't sure whether or not I would get to meet her, but I snuck in and waited for her to finish, and then I walked up to her. The Handmaid's Tale has been such an inspiration to me as a writer since I was a kid, and so I just couldn't believe that she was standing in front of me. I gave her a hug. I told her about my book. I told her how much I loved her work, and I got a picture with her, so it was exciting.
And now she's writing a sequel to The Handmaid's Tale that'll be out at the end of this year. And she will be in Raleigh for that in November. I think that might be a secret, but I guess it's not a secret anymore.
I'm so excited.
Excellent. Itaf, you told us a little bit about yourself earlier, and now I want to ask about your novel, A Woman Is No Man. The characters in the novel are either Palestinian immigrants or the children of Palestinian immigrants, and you are the daughter of Palestinian immigrants. The children of said immigrants in your novel are born in Brooklyn, New York, and you were born in Brooklyn, New York. There's a bookshop in the novel called Books and Beans, and you, Itaf Rum, run an Instagram account called Books and Beans. Your novel, A Woman Is No Man, is marketed as fiction, but where is the line between your experience and the fictionalized experience of the characters in your novel?
When I started writing this novel, many of the experiences that I went through as a child in Brooklyn with my parents, as a daughter of immigrants, as a first-generation Arab American, those were the stories that I wanted to talk about and tell. So a lot of A Woman Is No Man, a lot of that story is my story. It's not 100% autobiographical, of course. That's the beauty of fiction and the beauty of the creative process, is we take things from inside of us, inside our soul, our own stories, and then we morph them into a way that can be universal and can speak on behalf of many people that are going through those experiences. In terms of Books and Beans, I started the Instagram account Books and Beans when I was teaching at Nash Community College in Rocky Mount. I was teaching a literature class, and my students would come up to me and ask me to recommend books to them. And so I started this account around the same time that I started writing the novel in order to give my students an outside, like a social media account that they can follow and get recommendations from me personally. And it just took off from there. I started reaching out to publishers, getting ARCs, reviewing books, and at the same time I was writing A Woman Is No Man. And so I felt like it was very fitting, a way for me to delve into the book world while also creating a story that I knew ultimately I wanted to become part of that narrative. And I wanted the Arab American voice to be part of literature and also on bookstore, in bookstores and on bookshelves. I wanted us to be represented. So I feel like I'm proud of myself for, you know, making that happen.
Excellent. What was the experience like teaching at a community college while you were writing a novel?
I was teaching there for about 4 years before I started writing the novel. And I was teaching English composition courses and a few literature courses here and there, but mostly I was teaching composition, you know, English 111 beginning courses. And it was nice. It was my first real job after grad school. I went straight from state to teaching. And so I thought I was where I was supposed to be in terms of teaching and inspiring students. I really loved whether it was teaching them how to write, you know, clear, articulate sentences, or whether it was teaching literature classes and introducing them to diverse literature. I loved it. I thought it was something that I had a passion for, and my students could really feel it in the classroom, so they always loved coming to class. It was only later, and when I started writing, it really had nothing to do with teaching. I was going through a lot of personal things in my own life that made me want to express my thoughts and my place in my community. And that's what made me resort to writing.
Thank you. It's always great to have a good teacher, and I'm sure that you were. A kind of heavy question. What role did politics play in this novel? I guess both in the novel itself and in the composition of this novel.
That's a very interesting question. So there's multiple answers to that. The first would be, of course, as a Palestinian, the Palestinian-Israeli conflict is at the core of every Palestinian story that you will ever hear. It's been at the core of all the childhood stories that I've heard from my grandparents. Well, this is how things were, and this is what happened. And so as a Palestinian, I wanted to integrate that history into the novel by staying true to my people and our stories without necessarily making it a political novel of black versus white and, you know, good versus evil, because that wasn't my intention as a writer, and it's not my intention as a mother, as a daughter, in my real life. And so I, of course, weaved the history of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict into the story of this family as they saw it, you know, as they felt about it, and what it meant to them as a family, and the trauma of the 1948 exodus, the Palestinian and Israeli Nakba, as we call it in Palestine, and how that affected this family from moving to the refugee camps after losing their home to moving to the United States in search of a better life. So in terms of politics, that story was in there. On the other hand, another political thing, and I wouldn't say it's political as much as it's cultural, there was always this fear that I had while writing that I was further stereotyping the Arab community. Of course, it's not a secret that Arab Americans are already badly represented in the media, are already stereotyped into being terrorists or outcasted and alienated. And so there was this fear that I had while I was writing that on the one hand, I wanted to be true to my experiences as a woman in a conservative culture. And on the other, I was afraid that by doing so, I was causing further turmoil, disrespect, alienation to my people and stereotyping them with a single story and confirming these allegations, stereotypes. I was afraid of that. And so that to me was something I've had to struggle with as a writer.
Thank you. Listeners, we're going to take a short break for a word from our sponsor, and then I will be right back with Itaf Rum. The Bookin Podcast is sponsored by Libro FM Audiobooks. Libro FM lets you purchase audiobooks directly from your favorite local bookstore, Quail Ridge Books. You can pick from more than 100,000 audiobooks, including New York Times bestsellers and recommendations from booksellers around the country. With Libro.fm, you'll get the same audiobooks at the same price as the largest audiobook company out there. You know the name. But you'll be part of a much different story, one that supports community. Listeners of Bookin can get a 3-month audiobook membership for the price of one. Go to Libro.fm, that's Libro.fm, and enter Bookin, Bookin, in the promo code space. With each listen, take pride in knowing that you're supporting local bookstores. I'm back with Itoff Room, author of A Woman Is No Man, published by HarperCollins Publishers. Something that struck me in this novel, A Woman Is No Man, is the role of reading in books, particularly in the beginning. Books are viewed by the older characters as shameful pursuits or wastes of time. Can you talk to us about this?
So, the three protagonists in my novel have a great affinity towards books, and their books are looked upon by the older generation in this novel as distractions, presenting unrealistic ideals about the world and just a bad influence. And I felt like this was a good example on how to portray this very strict closed culture, in where there are certain rules that you have to follow in this culture and a certain way of life. And looking at books just gives you more perspective about the world and makes you question the way that you're living. And it was a great way for me to show that not only the power of books to take us away from our life and to broaden our mind and our perspective, but how that could be threatening to certain people and certain communities.
Thank you. And something else that struck me, of course, is the treatment of women in this novel. Women, especially as far as the older generation of characters are concerned, are not to have ambitions of their own, are not to read books or desire education. They are supposed to stay home, produce and mother children, and not just children, but specifically boys. And while they are pregnant, by the way, they are supposed to clean the house and cook for their husbands and make sure that they always have an abundant supply of tea at the ready. Can you talk about this characterization of women in your novel, A Woman Is No Man?
Yeah, and so I just want to clarify that this is a story of a very conservative family and is by no means a representation of all Arabs. And that's something that I did not want to do as a writer. However, this family that I speak of, this very closed off cultural perspective, which is, by the way, not only limited to Arabs, but I mean, it's very southern, many communities have this rigid way of thinking when it comes to the role of women, and that the prescribed path of marriage and motherhood that they're supposed to lead. So I wanted to write about these women in particular, whether they're Arab, whether they're Jewish, whether they're Hispanic, whatever they are, and the limitations that they have in their life, and how hard it is to break free from those expectations, especially when you're not given the freedom to get an education, read, leave the house and figure yourself out as a person and learn. And I think this is why I used books as a way to frame the story, because books, school, education, those are the things that not only allow us to grow intellectually, but also emotionally, and understand ourselves and our place in the world. And because these characters are in the story are not given the freedom to pursue those desires and to pursue those ideals and aspirations for themselves, they are limited in their ability to live an honest life because they're only allowed to do X, Y, and Z, and they can't break free.
And what of the characterizations of men in your novel who seem mostly to be drunkards who beat their wives and don't contribute to the raising of their children?
Again, it's a very close-knit family. So the men in this family are concerned with keeping the culture intact and passing down these traditions by making sure that the family is safeguarded from any corruption or any outside world influence. And to do so, they're the breadwinners. They're the ones that go to work. Their wives stay at home and raise the kids. And by maintaining this power structure, the men are able to provide for their family and have all the power, while the women are, their primary role is to take care of their kids and to stay at home. And this has been the way things are in most cultures forever. It's not an Arab thing. But in this, it's in this particular story, the responsibilities that women have far outweigh the men, in that they are not only trying to keep their own sanity and emotional well-being enough to raise their children, but then they also have to deal with the consequences that come from living in this abusive type of relationship with them, with their husbands. So I wanted to make sure that that was adequately portrayed on the page, specifically for my family, because the family in the story, because our stories are not often told as Arab American women or as Arab women. And when they are told, they're not told by us, they're told about us. So I wanted to be the one that tells our story, even if I talk about the dark aspects of it. I wanted to give our women a voice.
Itaf, on page 198 of A Woman Is No Man, your character Farida says to her daughter Sarah, "Do you know what it even means to be a Palestinian girl, huh? Or did I raise a damn American?" The irony, of course, being that she did raise an American, and that seemingly is what she had come to America to do. Can you talk to us about this passage?
I feel like I love that passage because that's literally my life growing up. And the lives of many first-generation Arab Americans, in that their parents left the refugee camps or left the poverty of Palestine in chasing the American dream, coming to America to give their children a better life. Yet, they don't want them to lose their cultural values. And so Farida does not want Sarah to become an American, in that she does not want her to lose sense of the Arab that she's supposed to be. She's supposed to be modest. She's not supposed to talk to men. She's supposed to prioritize marriage and motherhood above all else. And Farida wants to shelter her, and does shelter her from this by, you know, prohibiting her friends, making sure she doesn't leave the house. And ironically, she tries her best to shelter her, but through books, Sarah, you know, is rebelling, of course. And she's like, "But I am an American. Why did you bring me to this country if you don't want me to be an American?" And to Farida, that's not the point of bringing you to this country. To her, she's like, "I brought you to this country so that you can have a better life. You still have to be an Arab, though, so just be quiet." So it's that power struggle and the expectations of both generations was very interesting to me when I was writing this novel, because I experienced it firsthand, and I just think it's funny.
Thank you. And I'm curious, is there any significance to the character Isra, or Isra's name?
Ezra means a person who wanders in the night. And it's actually interesting because when I first named my character, my first draft of this novel was written through diary entries. Mm-hmm. It was Ezra writing a diary. And the diary was the story. And then my second draft, it changed into something more nuanced, which is a third person. I felt like a third person story was something more classical. And as a first time writer, I felt like I had a better control of the story through third person. So her name was Ezra because her mind was wandering at night, and she was allowed to be herself at night when she was writing.
Thank you so much. And Itaf, would you like to read us a passage from your novel?
Sure. A short one. All right. I will start with the very first page. "I was born without a voice, one cold, overcast day in Brooklyn, New York. No one ever spoke of my condition. I did not know I was mute until years later, when I'd open my mouth to ask for what I wanted and realize no one could hear me. Where I come from, voicelessness is the condition of my gender, as normal as the bosoms on a woman's chest, as necessary as the next generation growing inside her belly. But we will never tell you this, of course. Where I come from, we've learned to conceal our condition. We've been taught to silence ourselves, that our silence will save us. It is only now, many years later, that I know this to be false. Only now, as I write this story, do I feel my voice coming. You've never heard this story before. No matter how many books you've read, how many tales you know. Believe me, no one has ever told you a story like this one. Where I come from, we keep these stories to ourselves. To tell them to the outside world is unheard of, dangerous, the ultimate shame. But you have seen us. Take a walk in New York City on a sunny afternoon. Walk down the length of Manhattan until the streets become curved and tangled as they are in the old world. Go east over the Brooklyn Bridge, Manhattan's skyline thinning behind you. There will be a heavy traffic jam on the other side. Hail a yellow cab and ride it down Flatbush Avenue, that central artery of South Brooklyn. You'll go south on 3rd Avenue, where the buildings are smaller, only 3-4 stories high, with old faces. The Verrazano Bridge hovers on the horizon like a giant gull, wings spread, the sweeping view of the Manhattan skyline a distant mirage. Head south for a while, past the warehouses refurbished into chic cafes and trendy oyster bars, and the small family-owned hardware stores that have been there for generations. When the American cafes start to thin, replaced by signs in foreign tongues, you'll know you're getting close. Cross east 2 blocks to 5th Avenue. There, you will find Bay Ridge. Our 3-square-mile neighborhood is the melting pot of Brooklyn. On our streets, you'll find Latinos, Middle Easterners, Italians, Russians, Greeks, and Asians, all speaking their native tongues, keeping their traditions and cultures alive. Murals and graffiti cover the buildings. Colorful flags hang from windows and balconies. The sweet smell of churros, shish kebabs, and potpourri fills the air, a stew of humanity converging. Get out at the corner of 72nd and 5th Avenue, where you'll find yourself surrounded by bakeries, hookah bars, and halal meat markets. Walk down the tree-lined sidewalk of 72nd Street until you reach an old row house no different from the others. Faded red brick, a dusty brown door, number 545. This is where our family lives. But our story does not begin in Bay Ridge, not really. To get there, first we must turn back the pages to before I found my voice, before I was even born. We are not yet in the house on 72nd Street, not yet in Brooklyn, not yet in America. We have yet to board the plane that will carry us from the Middle East to this new world, have yet to soar over the Atlantic, have yet to even know that one day we will. The year is 1990, and we are in Palestine. This is the beginning.
That was a wonderful reading. Thank you so much. I've been speaking with Itzhak Rum, author of the fantastic debut novel, A Woman Is No Man, published by HarperCollins Publishers. Itzhak, thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Once again, I'd like to thank Itzhak Rum for joining me. Signed copies of A Woman Is No Man can be purchased in-store or online at www.quailridgebooks.com while supplies last. Our sponsor is Libro.fm Audiobooks. Please go to Libro.fm and enter the promo code BOOKIN, that's B-O-O-K-I-N, to get 3 months of audiobooks for the price of one. My name is Jason Jeffries, and this has been BOOKIN.